make a stink, go to the meeting, stand up, bring a friend, bring 10 friends, right?
There's really no reason to be intimidated by someone across a desk or sitting in a chair with a nameplate in front of them. These are folks just like you and I and everyone else.
I think because you never know if it's going to be your story or your connection that makes the difference.
Welcome to the 382nd installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. Lots of things have an off-season, a time when activity is temporarily put on hold. Growing plants, mosquitoes, and football come to mind when it comes to entities that go through an intense hurly-burly season, followed by a few months of relative dormancy. I was reminded recently of one thing that does not have an off-season, democracy. Sometimes that can be easy to forget, given all the sound and fury that goes into election campaigns. And keeping our democracy healthy does not end once the votes are counted. Voting in local, state, and national elections is just one way, albeit an important one, for average citizens to participate in the process of creating a governing system that helps make our communities better places to live. For democracy to remain vibrant year in and year out, we need to nurture it by making our voices heard and holding elected officials accountable. That means attending township meetings, making phone calls, sending emails, writing a letter to the local newspaper, and having formal and informal conversations with public servants. I recently had a great conversation with Emily Menge about the importance of viewing democracy as a full-time endeavor. Emily is LSP's political organizer. In that role, she works in our policy department, which means she spends plenty of time helping folks make their voices heard on the local and state level when it comes to the various issues our organization is involved in. Emily also leads up Land Stewardship Action, LSP's political action partner that works on voter education and endorsement of candidates, among other things. Emily recently spearheaded the launching of LSP's Local Democracy Challenge. During the fall of 2025, we're reaching out to members and allies, asking them to go beyond just casting an election ballot and to take up to 6 actions in various areas that help make their voices heard while holding elected officials accountable. These actions range from attending a local government meeting or reaching out to elected decision makers to learning how to read a bill or signing on to an action alert. We're purposely putting on this campaign in a non-election year for most political offices, as a way to remind folks that there truly is no off-season for democracy. The Local Democracy Challenge is designed to be an interactive, even fun, way to get involved. We're offering a number of options so people can plug into whatever activity they feel best fits their comfort level. And who knows, maybe the Local Democracy Challenge can help you stretch yourself in ways that aren't so comfortable. I recently chatted with Emily about the Local Democracy Challenge and why there's no off-season for democracy. The first part of this podcast features that interview. In the second part of the podcast, we've included conversations Emily recently had with 2 LSP members about how they get involved with local democracy in their communities. Emily, you're our political organizer with Land Stewardship Project, and through that role, you're an organizer through our policy program, our policy department, but also you lead our work with our kind of political action partner, Land Stewardship Action. And I've talked to you a little bit before about some of that work with Land Stewardship Action and some of this work around trying to build democracy in rural areas, that kind of thing. People, when they think of a political action partner that we're working with or some of that work around local democracy, they get most interested in an election year. And so I was really interested in talking to you about that we're in a non-election year as far as national elections and state legislative elections, that kind of thing. That doesn't mean democracy stops. So we've got this initiative now that we're launching this fall of 2025, called the Local Democracy Challenge. Mm-hmm. And I guess, could you start off, before you go deep into what that is, can you talk about widening our view of what democracy is and that it's not always about endorsing candidates and getting the vote, get out the vote campaigns, that kind of thing? It's a much wider thing, and that's kind of what this is about. And I think you had made the point before, too. It's very important to build this kind of stuff in the non-election year so that you're even more effective in the election years.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think that we do have this viewpoint, right, that democracy starts and ends at the ballot box or, you know, maybe before during, quote unquote, election season, right, when candidates are being endorsed and people are out door knocking and phone banking and you get mailers in your mailbox. But there's so much more that we can do to not only set ourselves up for success come the election, but also to impact the policies that are being passed and impact how our community is being governed throughout the entire year. You know, and regardless of kind of where you fall politically, there's a lot that's happening in government right now, right? We see that on the federal, the state, the local levels, a lot is happening. And it can leave a lot of us feeling like there's not much we can do, right? We're not voting for our governor, our, you know, U.S. Senate, Minnesota State House, Minnesota State Senate until next year. All those elections are happening fall of 2026, which is exciting and amazing, but there's a lot that we can do right now before we even vote for those folks. We can be reaching out and forming relationships. I think at the heart of democracy really is a relationship, and it's how you then use and leverage that relationship to make change down the line. And yeah, voting is a big piece of that too, but there's a lot that leads up to that and a lot that can supplement that. And I think that's something that at Land Stewardship Project and with our partner Land Stewardship Action, we really want to emphasize that there's always something we can do. Right. There's always a way we can engage. There's always action that we can be taking and a difference we can make.
There's no off season. It's not like, I guess to use a farming or gardening metaphor, there's no dormant season, so to speak.
No, there's not. I mean, there are seasons when people are on vacation, right? You know, there's times when we need to rest. I think as someone who works and focuses in electoral politics and electoral organizing, yeah, I need to rest, especially after a big election cycle. I'm sure, late November of next year, I'll need a lot of sleep. But right now, you know, I think there's always something we can be doing to make those connections and to set ourselves up for success down the line.
So, can you describe this local democracy challenge? What I like about it is it has very specific steps involved, and it gives some people something to grab onto, and maybe something sounds like people can pick maybe where they fit best in there, because it's some people are more comfortable with some ways of doing this kind of work than others. So that's what I like, is there's these options.
This challenge that we're launching this fall is kind of came out of two conversations. One, the conversation about people are feeling a little disenfranchised around the word and idea of democracy right now. So what can we do in terms of our messaging and communications to show people that democracy has a broader definition? There's more that we can do. And also recognizing that we will have an election next year. So how can we start setting ourselves up for success now with that? So what the challenge is it is a way for us at Land Stewardship Project and Action to highlight all of the amazing ways that our members have engaged in local democracy outside of just voting or an election season, how they've engaged, how they've made a difference, what they've learned, what they've taken away from this, how it's impacted them, and the work that we do. We want to highlight that, highlight this to our membership and our base, and then we want to encourage people to take action. So between mid-September, September 20th through November 20th, but basically up until Thanksgiving, right, we'll take a little holiday break, we'll be sending out mailers to everyone in our base with a card inside the mailer. And on this card, it's going to look a little like almost a punch card, right? And there'll be five actions and then an extra credit that you can take during this two-month period of time. In corresponding with each of these actions, we'll be highlighting a way that someone in our base has done this and what they learned from it, why it was important. So of these actions, you know, we have meet with a local elected official, you know, maybe that's a soil and water supervisor, a township supervisor, city council member, school board member, meet with them, form a relationship, get to know them. You can write a letter of support or a thank you letter to a state or local legislator, elected official for something they did that you appreciate, whether it was a vote they took, a bill they offered, thank them. Reach out, because that means a lot. It goes a long way in forming that relationship, especially when it comes to, you know, election time and we're trying to Maybe understand where this candidate's at on certain positions. Having that relationship is critical. Learn how to read a legislative bill. This one is a challenge. We have a wonderful member that we're highlighting for this.
I just got to say thank you, because I have tried to read some of those bills.
Yeah, no, it's not easy. And also what Jake, who we are highlighting for this action, said is they're also not designed to be easy to understand, right? They reference old bills. They reference definitions that are not in the bill itself, but also these bills are what govern our lives.
Yeah.
So it's also important to know and understand when we have the ability to engage and make a difference in them. When in that process can we insert ourselves? So that'll be a fun one. Complete an action alert or petition. We'll have examples or different links to some LSP action alerts or petitions, but then also some from our partners as well. Because this is a way that regardless of where you live in the state, you can do this, right? You can add your name, you can send that letter and be an additional voice. 5 is attend a local government meeting. Again, could be, yes, your county board meeting, your township, soil and water, and show up. Hear what's being talked about. If you want, you can stand up and ask a question, or you just sit there and observe and hear what people are saying, how they're talking about the issues that are in front of them that day is really impactful. And it also helps form those relationships and just gives you a window into what's happening locally in your community.
Yeah, I got to say, too, it lets local officials know that people are watching.
Yes, which is huge. They need to know that the decisions that they're making and that people care. People want to know, and that you are the people that they are accountable to, mm-hmm. right? And that's at the core of democracy. Who is accountable to who? By showing up, by being there. And one of our members, Bonita, always says, it's just, I'm a person in the room. I'm a person in the room, because that's powerful, right? Yeah. Just having people in the room is so powerful.
So that's 5 action steps, but was there an extra credit that people
yes.
could get as well?
So there are a few extra credit options.
Okay.
We've got write a letter to the editor. If you would like, for a little, you know, brownie points, we'll say write a letter about the importance of local democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's about this challenge or just about why it's important to do one of the actions that you've already completed.
And I'm just going to throw in there, we have on our website, if you go to our fact sheets page, the fact sheets tab, we have a fact sheet on how to write a letter to the editor. So I'd really, I think it's a pretty good piece that can kind of just get you over that hump of sometimes it's like, oh, how do I even get started or what do I include? And it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. And we'll make sure to include that as a link on we'll have a landing page about this whole challenge on our website. And we'll make sure to include that because I think we have really great resources on letters to the editor. That is definitely a niche that LSP excels in for sure. You could maybe, if you're feeling some gumption, apply to be on a local advisory board. You know, you can call your county office. They're incredibly helpful. And ask, are there, you know, there's planning and zoning. There are comprehensive plans, the Economic Development Authority boards. There are all of these appointed boards in counties and sometimes in townships as well. And you can apply to be on one of those. We don't always know when there are openings. Sometimes it's sent out via email. Sometimes it's not. But call and ask. If there's an opening or if there will soon be something like a comprehensive plan, or there are the watershed districts as well, those are all appointed positions within a watershed. And that's a great opportunity in a way where you don't have to run for anything, you apply and you can still be in a great decision-making seat. And then the last one is, you know, candidates are starting to announce their decision to run. So if there's a candidate out there who you are interested in, passionate about, you know, you could sign up to volunteer for them or reach out and get coffee. As a constituent, you could attend one of their meet and greets. A lot of candidates who are gearing up for next year's election, they're just trying to meet people in the area that they're running. So attend an event, get to know a candidate. And we think about, too, you know, my coworker, Matthew Sheets, who works on animal agriculture on the policy team. He gets emails from people, not all the time, but often enough, you know, about a factory farm proposal in their community and area. And, you know, they might be on the email list that they get a notification about that. But sometimes it's seeing the agendas for local government, especially like county board meetings, right? Where they're the ones that are maybe having to approve or discuss this proposal that might go above an animal unit cap or might require some sort of exemption to a variance or ordinance. And so people are paying attention. They're reading those things. They're just keeping an eye out. And then that has allowed us to take action following that, right?
This is a really good reminder, and we've talked about this before, that often an overlooked part of government and its impact on people is local government's impact. And we've talked about this in a previous podcast, but I think it's worth reminding folks of the impacts that maybe they aren't even aware of until they start to pay attention or show up at a meeting or look at the local paper of just how much. Can you give us some examples of how impactful local government is? And it's not just what's happening in D.C. or St. Paul.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And I think the work that we have done historically around factory farms or also with manure digesters, that's been something that we know has been coming up more recently. Mm-hmm. They're getting permits at a local level. That's usually county government, county boards that make those decisions. So I think that is, you know, more reactive work, right? It's not as much of the proactive, but we also see, I know my coworker Scott DeMuth has been working a lot with regional and local economic development boards. And these are appointed boards. There are a handful of regions in Minnesota, and they have a pot of money to invest in economic development in that county or region. That money could go a variety of ways and places, right? But if we have the people in the room and the voices there who want that to go to maybe local processing, cold storage, or farm to school, I know that's what Scott has been working on a lot, is how do we get that money to go to better markets and better, what equipment is needed, what processing facilities, so that we can get local food into the local schools. And that's something that can happen at a county or local level as well. Oh, I guess, and what I can highlight too, and I think I've said this on a previous podcast that we did, but I think it's really important to note, is that Minnesota is a state with local control. Wisconsin does not have that. Iowa does not have that. But we do have a really unique opportunity in Minnesota that, whether it is your township or your county, they do have the ability to supersede whatever, you know, the state has set as their limit or their regulation. You can't, you know, if the state says, and I always use animal unit as an example for this, but if the state says, you know, our animal unit cap is 1,000, and then the county can't say, well, ours is 2,000, but they can say it's 750, mm-hmm. 500, right? It allows the people, the decision makers and the constituents in a more specified area to have a bigger voice, say, control over what's happening in their area, right? Because we know, and we've seen it happen a lot, that there are outsized voices in St. Paul or D.C., but you know, how do we make sure to preserve those voices of folks in their communities as well?
I'm glad you brought that up, because it is, you can't take it for granted. The surrounding states, we've seen the result of them not having local control, where local townships, local counties even, just kind of get bowled over by some permit that's issued on the state level. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing the result. Mm-hmm. We're seeing CAFOs move into areas and really have a negative impact on the future of that community, and people just don't have any say at all. And it's got all these other impacts down the line, the water, the quality of life, pushing out the small and medium-sized farms. So we can't take that for granted. And we, LSP, part of our work every year at the legislature is to stand up for local control.
Yeah, it always comes up.
Yeah, and I will say, when we do that, people come out of the woodwork, township officials, local folks, they really are proud of local control. Mm-hmm. And the courts have supported local control.
Yeah.
So, but it is a constant fight. And it takes people who give a damn about it to show up at these local meetings.
Yeah. Well, it takes people to show up at the local meetings to make a stink, because I think local control, when I've brought that up to people in a work capacity, you know, maybe from other partner organizations, right, it's not always looked upon as favorably by others as it is at LSP sometimes, right? We've seen local control be used in ways that maybe partner organizations or even LSP wouldn't align with values-wise, right? And so people are struggling with this concept of, you know, a township being able to say, well, this is what we're doing in our township, and kind of, you know, veering from what the state is saying. But that's also because of who's in the room, right? So I think it's not an issue of local control. It's an issue of what voices are present, whether that's the elected officials, the appointed officials, or just the people who are there. Make a stink. Go to the meeting. Stand up. Bring a friend. Bring 10 friends, right? There's a way to impact at a really direct level, and that's what this challenge is trying to highlight is, yeah, I have the phone numbers somewhere for my congressional representative and my state or U.S. senators. Okay, I also, like, that's probably not going to do a ton right now. Amy and Tina, they're going to go the way that they're going to go. But there are ways that we can engage in democracy right now and actually make a difference at a local level and at a state level. You know, our state representatives, they're not in session right now. You know, they're out on farms. We've seen that. They're meeting with constituents. So engage, form those relationships, because there is a lot that we can do when, you know, even when we turn on the news and it's constant barrage of all these things that we have no control over.
Great. Well, so back to the local democracy challenge. The process is we're going to be contacting our members, sending out cards. They can also, sounds like they can pick up cards at our offices. Yeah, so for folks who maybe aren't on our mailing list or we aren't connected with on a regular basis, how could they learn more about this, you know, and get involved with this?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, Brian, everyone on our mailing list will get a card in the mail. We will have stacks of cards at each of our offices. So if you happen to live close to an office, you can come on in and get one. Or we will have a landing page on the Land Stewardship Project website. So it'll be landstewardshipproject.org/local-democracy. That's the landing page for the whole challenge. So it will have all the information and the description of each action and resources, but it will also have my contact information on there. So you can email or call me if you would like to request a card, and I can send that to you.
Amy Quadri has lived near Winona in southeastern Minnesota for over 45 years. She first got involved with attending government meetings while participating in LSP's fight to prevent Daily Farm from quadrupling the size of its dairy in the county. She talked to Emily Menge about the importance of quote-unquote showing up to public meetings and why we shouldn't be intimidated by folks who happen to be in the position of making decisions that impact the future of our communities.
So Amy, we're talking with you because you've been one of the LSP members who's been really great at showing up at local government meetings and just being present, engaging in the conversation. So I appreciate you sharing a little bit more with us today for everyone to hear. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience attending local government meetings, whether that's at the State Technical Advisory Committee, County Board, or Soil and Water?
Well, it goes back a long ways. When I was with LSP for the Daily Farm issue, and we went up to talk to the MPCA commissioner at the time. So that was kind of the start of my experience, really, going to formal meetings. I also attend township meetings. I go to county board meetings frequently. I went to the NRCS meeting, and I go to the Isaac Walton meetings. And the reason I do that, and I go to LSP meetings, of course, the reason that I do that, number one, is to get information. I have questions, and I get a lot of answers when I go to those places, if I'm lucky. Sometimes you don't get answers, but sometimes you do. And another reason is that it's an opportunity to make your voice heard and express your opinion to folks who may be in power to make change. I think that's really important. I would just like to note that it doesn't always have to be during the meeting, because sometimes those meetings, they really constrain speaking time, and they oftentimes aren't allowed or don't want to respond during the meeting. It varies. So there's always an opportunity after the meeting, if it's an in-person meeting, to kind of corral someone and talk to them and get to know them and get them to know you. And if you do that often enough, it can be really valuable to network and to make those connections further down the line. So I think those are a couple of really important meetings. You can network and you can get to know the folks that are making decisions.
And you can, you know, speak broadly about this, but what have you learned or kind of gotten from attending these meetings?
Things that I have learned are that folks in these positions are people just like us. There's really no reason to be intimidated by someone across a desk or sitting in a chair with a nameplate in front of them. These are folks just like you and I and everyone else. And so I think that's really important to keep in mind, is that they're there to serve you. They hold these positions by virtue of the fact that they've normally been either elected or appointed to serve the state of Minnesota, the township, or the county. And so I think that's a really important factor to keep in mind, so you're not intimidated by folks, especially at first before you get to know them.
Have you experienced any challenges in attending these meetings that folks should be aware of?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Like I stated earlier, some organizations are not interested in hearing opinions other than their own or the wants and needs of folks that might not match what their plans already are. And that's even more reason to speak out and speak up and develop a relationship with these people and organizations so that they can take that seriously, because that can be a real challenge. And oftentimes, in my experience, you're not going to make that happen the first time that you attend or speak up or talk in person or call them or send an email. This isn't something that happens in a one-time effort. This is an ongoing thing that you kind of commit to if you're, I guess, lucky.
Where would someone find information about attending a local government meeting?
Some are easier than others. Many organizational meetings you can find, of course, on websites or even like newspapers or affiliated organizations. You know, if you look, are in connection with those. For example, I'm a member of the Isaac Walton League, and very often they will let people know what meetings are coming up, say, with the MPCA or the Water Board or things of that nature. So I would say media is a really good way. Unfortunately, I've met a lot of folks who don't connect or use media, but that probably is the easiest way, is to search on media. I always say an ounce of prevention is worth a ton of regret. So after it's happened, it's too late to advocate for change, and it's pretty slim opportunity to be heard. So if you can be aware ahead of time and at least make your opinion, your stand, what you think known, I think it gives you a lot of peace of mind rather than all the anxiety and frustration that results later when you find out something has occurred that you really stand against, and it's too late to do anything. So those are a couple of reasons I think it's really important to be aware and to engage.
After serving in the military, Chris Shellstead came back to her hometown of Madison in western Minnesota and became very active in trying to support the economic and cultural vitality of this farm town. She opened Madison Mercantile in an old building on Main Street, and during the past few years has worked with other members of the community to make the shambling structure into a coffee shop and cultural hub where people get together for refreshments and to connect through cultural interactions and good conversation. Chris talked to Emily about the surprising amount of positive public policy that can be spawned just by sharing your story in an informal setting like a coffee shop or grocery store.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with us today. Can you share with me some about your experience, you know, meeting and talking with local elected officials? So that could be city council, soil and water, county, kind of any level of government that you've been able to interact with.
Yeah, I think one of the key things that I want to highlight is a lot of this happens in kind of an informal way. Because we operate the coffee house and the nonprofit community center space, sometimes these people are here not particularly in their official capacity, but we can just have these conversations because we have the space to do it, and people are here and they can sort of, what's the word I'm thinking of? They can sort of happen upon each other. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a formal, I'm going to request a meeting with soil and water. It's more of a, hey, I have a question. That person at the next table works for soil and water. I think I'll just ask, right? So sometimes I think that's kind of one of the key points, is that sometimes it's the informal interactions that happen in a place like this that bear the most fruit, because you're sharing a cup of coffee, or you're having a piece of pie together, or you're looking at some art together. So I think having a place like this where these people can intersect and just happen to run into each other, that's a lot of what happens. Of course, we have some formal events as well, but I think that it's these getting to know elected officials or people that are part of commissions and boards and things locally in a social setting really helps when you do have an issue or you do have a question, you already have a relationship with that person. So I feel like that's a key point of this, is the first time you meet an elected official shouldn't be when you have a problem or you have a beef with them, or you want to go tell them something. It should be, hey, we met at the art gallery, we met over coffee, and now, hey, I've got a concern. I feel like that's a key point to this whole question, is get to know people on a human level and a social level before you need them on a professional level, right?
So you kind of shared a little bit about, you know, why do you take this action, right? As a relationship building, to get to know somebody before something arises. You know, what have you learned or gotten from having these conversations?
I'm thinking about a conversation yesterday that I had with somebody who had recently brought something up to the school board. And this person approached the issue in a very confrontational way, like already having an attitude about it, which set that other person to having an attitude about it, and nothing got done. So I think what we've learned is to approach things like, you don't know the whole story about that person's background, right? You may not agree with them politically. You might be on the other side of the fence politically, but you don't know what their hot buttons are. You don't know what their family situation is. You don't. So if you start with the point of connection, I think that really helps. And this person I talked to yesterday said, you know, if I had known that this school board member has three little boys and that's where his focus is, boy sports, then maybe I would have spoken to a different school board member, you know, to kind of really understand who people are on a human level and what makes them tick, what their passions are, to approach people from that point of connection. So if that's what you're trying to do, if you're trying to overwhelm the situation, then heck yeah, go in with numbers. Like, for example, we had Senator Dames here. We might not each have something to say to him, but if 15 of us go and have the back of the person who is speaking, there's a strength in that, numbers. So one-on-one, it's either easy for a politician to kind of overwhelm you with their knowledge of facts and make you feel like your issue is just doesn't matter to them, or hey, you just don't know all the, you know, whatever. But if when 15 people are standing there and someone's got an issue, they're a little more careful. And it's hard to be to other people when there's 15 of those others standing there.
We talk about a lot, you know, when we're prepping people for lobby meetings, figuring out kind of what motivates a certain elected official. With lobbying, oftentimes that's at the state level, but that can be at any level, right? Whether that's school board or county board, people have different motivations. Some people want the facts
the word
and
I was
the numbers.
For.
Yeah. some people want the facts and the numbers and the bottom line. Some people want the emotion and the stories, and it's going to hit them differently. So I think having those conversations, like you're talking about, helps you understand what those motivators are too.
Right. And you can use the right communicator. Like, I might be the right person to talk about a veterans issue because I'm a veteran. Or if it's a divisive, controversial thing, you don't want that person who just inherently by their personality makes it worse, right? You got to use the right tool in the toolbox. But I feel like the casual in a small town, in a rural area, it kind of cuts both ways. You maybe have more social access to elected officials locally because you're going to run into them at the grocery store or at your kid's game or whatever. And so there's that opportunity to have those meetings. But then the flip side to that is it makes people cautious.
Right.
Because they know,
they are your neighbor, right?
They are your neighbor, right? And it's sort of like my brother, who's a doctor, doesn't go grocery shopping in his little town because he doesn't want those questions. He'll drive an hour away so he can just do his shopping. And so you don't want to bug people, and you don't want to be like labeled as a troublemaker. There's a fine line.
Right. I think starting with just a cup of coffee or right, a piece of pie, and starting with just having that conversation and learning about, you know, as opposed to at a grocery store, right? Or at, you know, the bank, inviting someone into that conversation to understand them a little bit more.
But to know each other more personally prior, that's a luxury we have out here. You know, you can't really do that in a big city. It's also the danger we have out here, because in a small town, if you're from here, you carry the weight of who your grandpa was and that business deal 50 years ago and all that kind of stuff. So
have you ever experienced any, besides kind of what you've named a little bit about walking on eggshells, not crossing boundaries, but have you experienced any other challenges in setting up these conversations or having the conversations with people?
Not really. I think the context that we had them this past year was as part of our welcoming communities group, where we invited in the sheriff and the mayor and the city council people and all that to come in and talk to us specifically about how we assess our community as in terms of its welcomingness and how we can make our community more welcoming. And people are not going to walk in and say, well, I don't want us to be more welcoming. The context this past year was pretty collegial. There wasn't a whole lot of, it wasn't a confrontational topic for the most part. Lately, though, we've been trying to set up some meetings to talk about the potential for ICE and deportation activities and things like that. And immediate responses from superintendents, yep, I'll be happy to come and talk, absolutely. But not so much from the sheriff's department. We're not really getting, you know, so I feel like it depends on the subject, whether people are quick to be responsive, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and that goes back a little bit to your previous point too about, you know, don't have these conversations when the issue's already present, right? Like, how do we kind of, you know, form that relationship prior to make that ask easier, right? But we don't always know what's going to come up or who that relationship is the most critical with.
I don't know. So sometimes the person you need to influence is the person that gets you to the leader, right?
Yeah, bringing out those levers of power for sure.
I think because you never know if it's going to be your story or your connection that makes the difference. I might have a story or a connection with a key leader or decision maker that touches them, whereas somebody else might not have that connection, you know? So I think everybody needs to be engaged because you never know what's going to be the successful route. That, and again, it's sort of the numbers thing. If one person tells me the sky is purple, I don't believe them. But if 400 people are telling me the sky is purple, I'm going to check it out. Numbers matter.
For more on the Local Democracy Challenge, including details on how to participate and qualify for a prize, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 382 at landstewardshipproject.org. You can also go directly to the challenge page by logging in at landstewardshipproject.org/local-democracy. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Morgendale, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.